Welcome to Expanding Your Faith, a podcast hosted by Bishop Greer Godsey of the Old Catholic Churches International. Expanding Your Faith brings together a panel of well-educated clergy and laity to discuss modern events with a biblical perspective. Our podcast is about to start. Please stay tuned. Welcome to Expanding Your Faith. I'm Bishop Greer, and joining me tonight is Reverend Mark.
Greetings, everyone.
And Bishop Ben.
Blessings to everybody.
Tonight we're going to talk about sweet baby Jesus. Childhood and infancy of Jesus. Since we're coming up here on Christmas already. So I thought that'd be a good topic for us to explore right here at Christmas. Not a lot said in the canonical gospels about the life of Jesus as a child.
He was born.
He got these
circumcised.
Creepy dudes came visited him, bringing him gifts of for dead people.
How about that? You had these creepers in Jesus' day trying to find this little baby. They're just running around.
Have you seen a little baby?
We're looking for a small child.
I'm sure that was an interesting adventure in the first century.
They didn't have any white.
Followed a star.
They didn't have any white vans. They were in camels at the time.
Malchus standing there going, "You want a piece of candy? I got some in my pocket here." Anyway. So, not a lot in the Gospels. In fact, we see a glimpse of Jesus in utero with Mary and Elizabeth's meeting, and then he kind of pops out, and we have a circumcision, and then there's a 12-year gap. And we see him going to get to the temple to get his bar mitzvah, basically. And then we don't see him again until he's in his 30s. The Bible leaves out quite a bit of his childhood, but that doesn't mean that there aren't documents out there that purport to, discuss that very topic, his childhood. Typically called infancy gospels. One of the earliest infancy gospels is known as the Proto-Evangelium of James, written in 145 AD. And in it, he talks about some of the same things that Matthew and Luke talk about, but he also talks about Mary's upbringing some too, her childhood. And the Proto-Evangelium of James is actually where the Roman Catholics get their doctrine of the Assumption and the Immaculate Conception and perpetual virginity of Mary all come from the Proto-Evangelium of James. And James basically makes it out in a story about Jesus' birth with a midwife. And the midwife attested that before she gave birth, Mary was a virgin, and then she checked her after birth and claimed that she was still a virgin. I don't know how that worked, but it's what she claimed. So that's where we get the perpetual virginity. Now, mind you, just as a side note, the Proto-Evangelium of James is considered a heretical book by the Roman Catholic Church, but they used it for creating doctrine for those things. So there's that little tidbit for those that were not aware. So we declare it heretical, but then we turn around and use it to create doctrine.
Sounds legit to me.
Mm-hmm. So, and there's some good stories in some of these, like for instance the infancy gospel of Thomas has some good quotes from Jesus. They're it's basically set in quote format, and it talks a little bit about Jesus' birth. And then the Gospel of Pseudo-Matthew is another infancy gospel that they claim was composed in the 8th or 9th century. And but it is mentioned earlier than that in some writings. So. And then there's the Syriac Infancy Gospel. And then History of Joseph the Carpenter and the Life of John the Baptist. Really what's interesting too is, for instance, in, I'm trying to find where I saw this. In one of the infancy gospels, Jesus creates some birds and gives them life. Clay, creates them out of clay and then makes them come to life. And that same story is related in the Quran. That's from the Gospel of Thomas, and it's actually in the Quran as well. Story of Jesus giving life to the birds as an infant. So it was some of these writings were at least known by the 500s when the Quran was written. So, and I think the point here is that, you know, Jesus had a normal childhood like anybody might have. You know, just because he was, you know, considered divine doesn't mean he didn't have, you know, a normal upbringing, normal life like most people when he was growing up.
Well, we're told that Scripture states that, you know, Christ was tempted and tested as in all points as we. And I can't imagine that the only time that Jesus faced temptation was in the wilderness. Obviously, throughout life, you have challenges. And in order for Christ to be able to associate and communicate and offer hope to people, has to know a lot of the things that we have to go through, just like a normal person. So I'm sure he had issues growing up and teenage years and all that stuff, especially if he had glimpses of the things he was supposed to do and moving forward. You know, that could be a very difficult place to be where you're in a holding pattern until you're in your 30s.
Knowing
that you're supposed to make this impact and in the world. I definitely believe, of course, you know, you don't have the scriptures there saying that, but definitely believe in the middle of his journey in the days that aren't mentioned, that he went through a lot of the same things that you and I would go through. Maybe some different scenarios, but a lot of the different same emotions.
I want to read this story. I think it's cute. It comes from the Infancy Gospel of Thomas. I'm going to read it to y'all. Chapter 2 of the Infancy Gospel of Thomas says, "When this boy Jesus was 5 years old, he was playing at the forge of a rushing stream. He was collecting the flowing water into ponds and made water instantly pure. He did this with a single command. He then made soft clay and shaped it into 12 sparrows. He did this on the Sabbath day, and many other boys were playing with him. But when a Jew saw Jesus was doing what Jesus was doing while playing on the Sabbath, he immediately went off and told Joseph, Jesus' father. See here, your boy is at the fore and has taken mud and fashioned 12 birds with it, and so has violated the Sabbath. So Joseph went there, and as soon as he spotted him, he shouted, "Why are you doing what is not permitted on the Sabbath?" Jesus simply clapped his hands and shouted to the sparrows, "Be off, fly away, and remember me, you who are now alive." And the sparrows took off and flew away noisily. The Jews watched with amazement and left the scene to report to their leaders what they had seen Jesus doing. Yeah. Then another, the son of Ananias, the scholar, took a willow branch and drained the water Jesus had collected. He got so angry, he yelled at him, "Damn you, irrelevant, reverent fool. What harm did the pond of water do to you? From this moment, too, you too will dry up like a tree, and you will never produce leaves nor roots nor bear fruit." In an instant, the boy completely withered away. Then Jesus departed and left for the house of Joseph, and the parents of the boy who withered away picked him up, or carrying him out sad because he was so young. They came to Joseph and accused him, "It's your fault. Your boy did this." The villagers go to run Jesus out of the village for killing one of their children. Joseph summoned the child and admonished him in private, saying, "Why are you doing all this? These people are suffering, and so they hate and harass us." Jesus says, "I know that these are not your words. Still, I will keep quiet for your sake. Those people must take their punishments." There and then, his accusers became blind. Jesus just going around smiting everybody. When Joseph saw what Jesus had done such a thing, he got angry and grabbed his ear and pulled very hard. The boy became infuriated with him and replied, "It's one thing for you to seek and not find. It's quite another for you to act this unwisely. Don't you know that I don't really belong to you? Don't make me upset." Jesus was getting a little testy. And there's a long dialogue. Ultimately, Jesus heals the young boy, brings him back to life. And then in another story, he and another boy are playing on a roof. The boy falls off the roof and dies. The parents blame Jesus. So Jesus raises the boy from the dead just so the boy can tell his parents what really happened. The boy's like, "No, Jesus didn't push me." Well, there's a lot of little stories about Jesus healing people as an infant, as a child. People who got hurt and stuff in the village around them. So and then there's a story about Jesus going to the temple with his parents. And that's where the infancy gospel of Thomas stops. He's there at that point. So, yeah. Gotta find the other page here, sorry. So, yeah. It's the end with the Gospel of Thomas. And then the Gospel of Matthew. So the infant Gospel of Pseudo-Matthew, the infancy Gospel of Matthew. And another one that is not wanting to pull up for me right now, so we'll move on. Yeah, some of these stories, Nate says, I got raised by my Nana on the Bible, but she never taught me these stories. Yeah, these are the stories that got left out of the Bible. Stories that, you know, are considered too radical to be put in the Bible. So, yeah. So that's interesting. If you want to go read, there's more information online about various different infancy gospels. And they're well worth the time to read. If nothing else, just for, you know, your own future knowledge. So, yeah. I thought there's going to be a lot more material topic. As people are now starting to realize that there's not a lot of material to this topic. One of these days we'll go through maybe some of those books and look at them. But that was not going to be my intention tonight, to go through those. But I think it's important to remember, especially right here at Christmas, you know, there are so many people who live a life very similar to that of what Jesus and his family went through. You know, persecution, having to flee their home. You know, they had to up and leave when Jesus was about 2 years old and flee to Egypt, living under the radar because Herod wanted to kill Jesus. And so, you know, that's why we celebrate the Feast of the Holy Innocents on the 28th of December, is to remember all those young people killed by Herod in the days after Jesus's, in the years after Jesus' birth. And so we know that, you know, that event happened almost 2 years after Jesus' birth, because Herod decided to kill children 2 years of age and younger, make sure he got Jesus. And much like Moses, Jesus is saved through, you know, his parents' willingness to give up part of themselves. They decided to leave and move to Egypt to avoid that possible persecution, possible death. And so the Coptic Church has a tremendous tradition of some of the things that happened while Jesus was in Egypt. You know, he managed to cause springs to show up in places where there had been droughts and no water. You know, he healed people who were sick and injured, as well as wrought other miracles to prove who he was. So, I mean, there's a lot to the infancy of Jesus that is not contained in the Bible. A lot of people don't realize, too, that Jesus wasn't really born in December. True. And Jesus was not born in December. He was more likely born somewhere around September.
What?
Believe it or not, NASA, along with theologians and scholars, have put together possible dates for Jesus' birth, death, and resurrection based on the information given in the gospel accounts about astrological events that were occurring at the time. And their belief is that Jesus was born somewhere in the neighborhood of September 11th. Yes, you heard that correctly. September 11th. Which happens to also be the Coptic Orthodox Church's New Year's Day, when they celebrate Jesus as King. So that's kind of interesting, a little tidbit too. So anyway, and he died sometime in April. So, Yeah. That was a good paper I wrote about it too, but nobody liked the idea of changing the calendars.
Yeah, it's very interesting about his death in, during Passover, because a lot of his, a lot of the symbolism revolves around Yom Kippur, the Jewish feast and Day of Atonement. So it's very interesting how that lands. But he obviously was killed during a feast of Passover, which there's a lot there too. But
well, his birth being in September, that puts it usually right between Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Beginning of the Jewish New Year and the Day of Atonement. So,
right.
You know, in fact, I don't know. We'd have to go back and do the math, but I'm sure we could roll the calendar back to the year he was born and see what day Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur fell on. Counting, of course, for Gregorian calendar drift.
Right. Yeah, I'm not that person to do that, but if we could get Commander Data to do it from Star Trek. But, yeah. You know, a lot of people get up in arms about, you know, he wasn't born on December 25th and stuff like that. And I get it. And a lot of people getting up in arms about the Christmas trees or all the traditions that we have around Christmas. But the fact that we're pausing in order to honor, commemorate, and remember is what's important. There's a lot of other days that probably could have been celebrated and stuff like that. To me, what is taken, you know, what people take and use for to slight Christianity or the memory of Jesus or God is one of those moments where you can turn it and take it around and use it for good. Just like the word Christian was meant as a derogatory statement in the early days, and they adopted it as, you know, yeah, call me a Christ-like person, someone who emulates Jesus, and so on and so forth. So, boy, that doesn't hold as much water these days as it used to.
Right. Well, I think we get wrapped up in that minutia things, you know. Oh, do we have enough presents under the tree, or, you know, did I get everything that I needed or wanted for Christmas? And we forget about the true realities of the Christmas story.
Well, I truly believe Christmas can have so many layers of meanings. Of course, at the heart of it is the gift of love and hope and joy and peace, the message of Christ, and the message that the birth and his arrival means to us. And it also can, you know, it has so much intention of friendship and family. It's definitely a pause in our year, toward the end of our year, to remind us to think on those things that matter. Those things are important. Those things are vital in life. Because even if you don't believe, you know, there's a lot of people that don't believe in Christ, Christmas still has that moment and meaning of coming together. And so you can, you know, start there with some people and, you know, hopefully lead them into the message of God's love for them. But yes, it's a very difficult time for folks because of the desire and the meaning everybody has around this holiday for connection and relationship. And at the heart of that is the relationship with the divine and with the Almighty. And when we have messed up relationships or strained relationships or broken relationships with other people, we often translate that to our relationship with God and or relationship with others. that, well, if my relationship with these people are all messed up, obviously my relationship with everybody else is going to be messed up, and we have no hope or expectation that it resolves or gets better. And we get this time of year where it's about connecting, it's about coming together, it's about, parties and all this stuff. And when you have difficulty making those connections, those relationships, this time of the year is definitely harder because so many people are making those connections. So, the message of Christmas, even though December 25th isn't, obviously the day that he shows up, it's the day in which we remember, it's the day that, whatever time it was, we are remembering that moment in this time. I understand the history of the Christmas tree, and I understand the history of changing the day and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, my whole focus is the connection of what it means from God, what it means by my worship to God, what it means by me having family and friends connecting, and yes, presents get out of hand, I myself was running around today trying to get stuff and stressing out on things, but at the end of the day, it's about remembering those that are important in your life and, giving a gift, saying, hey, and if you don't have the money to give a gift, we all have time. We all have the gift of time. Sometimes that's all we can give.
Your thoughts, Bishop?
Well, I was sitting here contemplating, about family and time, and Reverend Mark has a very, very good point there, how to reflect, and a lot of people see the time of season and the holidays as brutal Christmases where they're down and depressed. They don't know what to do with themselves, They're sitting at home, they don't want to be left alone. And I get that too, some part of the day that people don't want to be messed with. And, at that point, you think about, how can I make it better?
Right.
Or what can I do to make it more palatable for me, for anybody else suffering like depression or anxiety? So, that your heart guides you and the spirit guides you in that manner.
Right. Well, I think that's very true. And I think that part of what we have lost in the Christmas season is that heart.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We're focused on the realities of what Christmas is. We talk about, is the Christmas tree a pagan symbol, Christian symbol? Are we worshiping on Jesus' actual birthday, or was it the birthday of Saul? What is the whole kit and caboodle behind the observance? We forget what the real message is behind it. We forget the heart of it.
Correct. And some people have turned it into too commercialized. They commercialize Christmas way too in abundance.
Right. Well, you only need to turn the TV on for 5 minutes, Christmas season. And there's 100 different commercials about different Christmas things. Oh, your Christmas just won't be the same if you don't have X, Y, Z.
Well, heck, by July, stores and places are turning people's attention towards it. And, anybody that's been to my house knows how much I love Christmas.
Oh.
And, I'm somebody that's like, ooh, almost the earlier the better. But I myself am turned off when I'm still in my shorts and sandals, and I turn down an aisle in the middle of July, and there's there's snowmen lining the aisles. I'm like, ooh, it's a little early. It's a little early. I mean, even for my almost... I need to join Christmas Anonymous, places because I love Christmas. But even with my obsession that's still too much for me.
And you're right, Nate. There are a lot of people that are alone this time of year, too.
Yes, correct.
And we tend to forget those people, you know. We don't even think about them and their situations and how much it means just to for somebody to stop and check on them, you know, see if they're okay, you know, invite them over for, you know, tea and crumpets or something on Christmas.
That's right.
On Christmas Day, you know. We also forget those the most disadvantaged, you know, the homeless and the poor, the widow and the orphan who, you know, are supposed to be our primary focus as Christians, are on those most in need. But we tend to forget them. And
people in nursing homes and people in nursing jails and
jails, hospitals, you know, clinics. You know, there's all kinds of, you know, people in the world that need somebody just to remind them that they are important. They're a human being and they deserve love and attention. And so this is a good time of the year to make that possible, make that happen, you know, as part of your Christmas list.
And I think that,
to do that,
I think that's important to do. It's definitely important to do with those people that you spoke of there. It's also important to do that with people that are among us that we take for granted. We often think that because somebody's in a crowd, they're not alone. We often think because somebody is a strong leader or a strong whatever person that they've got it all together. And we neglect telling people how important they are to us when they are. Now, I'm not talking about making some stuff up just to fluff people. But when's the last time we stopped and we told people that are important in our lives, hey, you're important in my life and thank you. You know, I'm here for you. And even because having pastored for so long, for gosh, almost 15 years now, I guess. It's amazing the people that will come and break down in my office or talking to me, pull me aside, and you think they've got so many things together. They lower the boom on you of all the stuff that they've been going through, whether it's mentally or physically, emotionally, financially, some type of way. And you would never think to pause and just say, hey, thank you, or you mean something to me, what can I do for you? And I think Christmas time should be moments where we do just those things as well.
And, you know, I have to admit, I'm guilty of it. We all get involved in Christmas season, the holiday season. We get involved, we as pastors tend to forget sometimes who our congregation really is, and we forget to acknowledge people that are suffering. Could we get so busy in our own schedule that we do forget?
So busy.
I'm guilty of that myself. Forget about to say, well, I love you. You know, many people that love them welcome.
Well, it's been just nonstop for me, and I felt like I got a head start on, you know, my decorating and all my stuff in early November, and then I found myself leading up to my Christmas party, and I was like, for my staff, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm still doing this, or I'm still doing that, and I'm scattered here, and I'm scattered there, or I'm doing this, and we often just get overwhelmed and we let things overwhelm us. We let the pressure of things overwhelm us. You know, as a whole, people aren't good about, you know, pre-planning or planning ahead or stuff in it, not anymore. And so we let things just overwhelm us. And oh, I got to do it for this. Oh, I got to do for that. Oh, I got to do for this. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day and they're like, oh, well, you know, you just have to get for this or just have to. I said, I have a whole staff of people at church. I have people at work. I have people in my personal life. I said, no, it's not just, you know, I wish it was just me. I wish it was just three people. But no, it's not that way.
Okay. We just got an alert from a pastor on Facebook as we were sitting here. It says, the atheists are using satellites to intercept prayer to Jesus and turn them evil. It's Christians against satellites. The negative impact of artificial satellites and space debris orbiting the Earth. Satellites interfere with our ability to effectively communicate with God. Prayers often collide with satellites and are deflected or destroyed upon impact. Satan uses satellites to intercept and offer prayers before they reach God, resulting in disastrous consequences. Satellites block God's ability to watch us. Satellites interfere with the flight path of angels. Continued proliferation of satellites causes navigational issues for Jesus and further delays his return to Earth.
Please tell me this is satire. Please tell me this is...
I certainly hope it is.
Oh, my Lord.
So, question. Does that affect Santa Claus, too?
I don't... I guess not, because he's not
Santa Claus. He's in a different vortex of...
He doesn't... I guess he has an anti-satellite...
device?
Device on the sleigh.
Oh, Lord.
Own special satellite Fuzzbuster.
Where did you find that?
Oh, a friend of ours posted it.
Lord of mercy.
You
know what's sad is somebody will read that and they'll be like, well, there's some truth to that, I bet.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because I have seen just as much and I've heard just as much from radical folks that, yes. Yes.
I guarantee you he's going to have a sermon brother on that Sunday.
Oh, I'll find a way to incorporate it somewhere in my sermon.
I heard a preacher the other day talking about how people that have beards are compromising and not living for God because they have beards.
But wait, Jesus had a beard at one time?
The Old Testament... is literally chock full of beard tips.
Mm-hmm.
I had to rewind it. So I know I heard that wrong. I know he's joking about something, right?
Welcome to the Christmas season.
Sure wasn't. I was going, oh my gosh.
Well, folks, we're going to go ahead and wrap up this evening's podcast. Next week,
breaking out the list.
Next week, yes. Let's take a break from seriousness and talk about cigars. Cigar episode.
I thought you were going to say next week Bishop Ben's carrying the show.
Yeah. Nope. So we'll do a cigar episode next Saturday. So I hope you all will join us for that. Thank you, Reverend Mark and Bishop Ben, for being here tonight.
Thank you
for hosting us, Bishop.
Always a pleasure.
And Francis back here for keeping an eye on us.
Yeah, making sure that we say what we're supposed to. Mm-hmm. So until then, God loves you and so do we. Until we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright, my friends.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Expanding Your Faith. For more information on Expanding Your Faith, check us out on facebook.com/expandingyourfaith. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you find your podcasts. Until next week, when we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright.